Good morning and welcome to the FTS Betslip.
On Tuesday the 28th of April, we've almost got a jingle going now. This is getting out of hand. Morning all, hope you're all well. She's back. She won't be here tomorrow because we've got FTS guest tomorrow. Sam's coming on from Stockport, Southport, Liverpool, somewhere up there. Northern, got to get an interpreter in for that one. I haven't booked him. You're going to do a recipe in a minute, Sammy?
I am doing a simple pudding that we can all easily make.
Do you want to say anything to Martin Gay, who knocked you out the poker last night?
Well done.
Well, happy, Martin. She wasn't happy. Had her three kings and you beat her. She wasn't happy. Well done. Had the poker last night. Good turnout. 44 for a Monday night. Well, the old players are starting to shine through. Those same old faces now at the end. And Matt, who came third on Friday, went on to win and bag himself some money.
Keto Matt.
We know him as Keto Matt because he's the one who introduced us to the keto diet. Yeah. Well done, Matt. Thank you all for playing. And we'll be doing it all again Friday. Register. It's 11 quid and it is becoming a good bit of fun, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It is a good laugh in there. Good fun.
So, win, lose, it doesn't matter.
I don't know if Graham Eakins is listening. I watched your beat, Graham. Wasn't good, that. I felt very sorry for you.
There is. And that bit where it goes slow after you've got your...
While it's waiting for the turn, kind of that little pause.
Yeah. I could actually break my computer.
I know, you get very leery. I got in the money. I did make it into the money last night. I didn't get any cards at all. Funny enough, the weeks I've gone out, I've had cards. I got no cards last night, but managed to nudge myself to seventh place. I feel the win is just round the corner.
Whereas I did get the cards and I...
Yeah, you. I think you were a bit reckless myself.
I was a bit reckless, but I was drinking Prosecco.
So. I wasn't paying attention, but I think you were a little bit reckless. Don't drink and gamble. Well, we're going to tell a story about, talking of drink, going to tell a story about when I got hammered and pissed you off last year, haven't we?
Yes.
We were just talking about little stories that we haven't got. We have got a few, some you can't tell, but...
really?
I don't drink a lot at home. I mean, obviously in the lockdown, it's forcing you to have the odd Guinness, but I do like to go out and have a few beers. And if I go out, I'm out. Go out with Suggsy, you know you're out. And the racing boys and that, we go out once, and Golf Bay, we go out twice a year. So we have one do at Christmas and one do in the summer. And we head up to London. We go to a nice restaurant. We head to a pub first, normally have three or four beers, go to a really nice restaurant, pick a different one every time. Drink a load of wine, eat some food.
Was that not on the... That was when you were drinking the keto beer?
I was drinking the keto
beer.
The
gluten-free.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, sorry.
So So we do it twice a year, a different restaurant, and then we end up in a pub or bar or whatever. So we went to a place called The Guinea in London, which is really nice, and it's like a pub restaurant, so it's got a... really nice pub and then a restaurant at the back, and got there about midday, and Sam normally does a bit of cabbying to take us home in the evening. So I was on that keto at the time, so I walked in and asked the guy if he had any keto friendly beer, and he gave me some bottle. He said, I have actually, and he pulled out a bottle, I can't remember, it's called Dam or something.
Dura Dam
or something. And I thought, just being keto free, it's probably fairly low alcohol. And I started drinking these at a fairly rapid pace. And after about eight, I realised that they were about 5.5%. And I was a little bit pissed. We then went for the meal where I drank a load of wine. And then we went out to the bar bit in the evening. And I continued to drink more until I was absolutely paraplegic that I was racing my mate through the streets of Mayfair in our suits.
And a brand new Ted Baker shirt.
And a brand new Ted Baker shirt. And I, which Sam had actually chosen for me. And I, in this running race that we decided to have, I stacked it, crashed into somebody, knocked them flying, and completely and utterly, first time I'd put this shirt on, ripped it all. I had tarmac marks all up me arm and breast. My mate done his Achilles in the race. So we decided at about 9 o'clock it was time to go home. So Sam was going to give a few a lift, as I said. So I texted her and said, we're getting on the train at St Pancras. We'll be at Ebbsfleet in about 20-odd minutes, whatever it was. So Sam's headed to Ebbsfleet. We've got to St Pancras, and my mates, two of my mates have decided, there's four of us, and Sam has given us all a lift. Two of them have decided to go to the loo. The other two of us have gone through the barriers and got on the train. The train has pulled out, and we haven't seen these other two, can't find them. And it's a 18-minute journey from St Pancras to Ebbsfleet. And we both fell asleep. And we didn't get off at Ebbsfleet. I woke up about 40 minutes later as the train was pulling into Ashford International. And I thought, shit, I've made a gaff here. My mate was fast asleep. I woke him up. I said, we've cocked up here. We've got to get off. And Sam was sat at Ebbsfleet International and we were down at Ashford International. So I phoned her.
Reading a Herkindo.
I phoned her and said, we fell asleep. Were you happy?
Steaming.
The
only thing that saved you was that I did take my Kindle with me to read. So at least I had a book.
Yeah. So our two mates had got on the train after. They'd come out and spoke to you, hadn't they?
Yes. They'd got on the train after you. And then they proceeded to wind me up.
Yeah. So I'd phoned and said, we're going to get the train back. Fortunately, it wasn't the last train, so we were able to get a train back. But we ended up, I think you left home at 10.
Yeah.
And we ended up getting home after midnight, didn't we? We both, me and my mate, we both got in the car. We were like little schoolboys, weren't we?
Yes, you were.
I knew not to say a word, not to say one thing. So we just both got in the car, sat down, heads forward, and didn't say a word.
You really wanted to giggle like schoolboys as well, didn't you?
Well, yeah. We were still a little bit tipsy, I'm not going to lie.
Yes, but I never ever say anything when you're drunk. I always do it the next day. Girls, remember this. Give them shit the next morning because that's when it hurts the most. And they're, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry.
I was sorry.
I know, but it hurts you more the next day because you'll remember me giving you. Oh, and also, I also have a little 20 quid out your wallet to go shopping with. By the way, that's your payment.
I think it's more than 20 as well.
Well, yeah, but I'm not being honest there. But
and you, that's the first time ever, though, in that I've ever fallen asleep on a train.
It is.
If I've said to you, could you?
You
pick
are
me up?
A pain in the ass though when you get to that level of drunk.
Well, yeah,
you are that. Yeah. Absolute pain in the ass.
Shh! They won't want to go out with me.
Sugsy knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, hang on, Sugsy is an absolute pain in the ass when he's had a load of drink.
No, you are.
And that flipping Chris Jones and spreadsheets—they're all murder. Anyway, enough of all that.
Okay.
So they don't want to hear about our drinking exploits. They want to hear about recipes.
Well, it's just normal, isn't it?
I'm not sure, as my mate texts me the next day, I've been out drinking, whatever he is, 40-odd. And he does drink. He's out much more than I ever go out. He said, I've been out drinking all my life. I think that is a first for me, having running races around Mayfair with my suit on.
And he looked like Hagrid when he got off the train.
He did. He's a big lad. He did look. He was limping for weeks. He was limping for weeks. Down his Achilles. There you go. See?
So Sam's cabs have gone into administration now. Yeah. And she's not giving the boys lifts anymore.
Yeah. Don't involve me.
Yeah.
Right, you're doing baked, what are you doing? You're doing a simple, easy one, baked apples.
Yes, just baked apples. You call them. Get your apples, however many you need or want, core them. You'll want some raisins, sultanas, a bit of sugar, a bit of cinnamon in the middle. And if you've got some golden syrup, put that in there as well, as much as you want. Put a little bit of foil over the bottom just to hold that in. The oven temperature really is about 190 centigrade fan, 170 in gas mark 5. Bake for about 25 minutes to half an hour until they're nice and soft and shriveled. Then you can put a nice dollop of clotted cream on the top or some custard. They're a good quick pudding. They're tasty. They use up fruit apples that are in the bowl that, you know, are probably
past their serving. Yeah, if your apples are just going soft, they're good for that. Get them in the oven.
Yeah, it's a good quick pudding if you fancy something sweet.
All right, custard. Hot or cold?
Oh, don't be silly. It's hot.
No, cold custard. Cold custard. Disgusting. Cold that's custard disgusting. Straight out the Ambrosia tin. Ambrosia tinned custard cold.
It's disgusting.
It's not. It's the only way forward.
It is not hot custard.
Ambrosia. Devon.
When you went to school, did you have cold custard on your puddings?
I didn't eat that shite.
Oh, no. You hid your sandwiches under the bed, didn't you? And your mum phoned to be here later.
We don't want to have this conversation. I'm talking about custard. We're talking custard, not flipping.
I deflected.
And we're not talking cold custard. That could be the one.
Is it yes. Hot or oh, cold yeah, that, custard? Yes. Well, there you go.
Devon Ambrosia cold custard. Not out the carton either, out the tin. None of that carton stuff. Tins of Devon Ambrosia custard cold. Beautiful. Whatever you want it with. Nonsense.
Hot custard.
Nonsense.
It burns the roof of your mouth hot.
Yeah, nonsense. Never been. I had something else for you. Oh, do we want to give them an update on Jodie? Because yes, they're all concerned about what's happening.
Yeah, can do. We've had better news.
She's home now. Been let out. Got to go back.
Thursday.
She's
on BP meds. And it was a little bit high this morning. But she's got WhatsApp to the doctor, which is brilliant. And he said that was okay. She's got a certain number that it can't go over. And she's gone for a little walk this morning, just a little bit of exercise. She felt better for a bit of fresh air. And now she's going to chill at home. Her partner's got all the blood pressure friendly foods in for her. So let's hope that baby stays in there cooking.
Cooking for as long as possible. Good. So yes, well, that's fantastic. Fantastic. Mainly you'll be a bit more relaxed.
Yes, well, I've had a few restless nights worrying.
So, yeah, good news. Right, have you got anything else?
No, have you?
I've got loads, and I've got to move on and talk about...
I'm going to go and sort out my kitchen cupboards.
Right.
Give them a good clean and tidy, chuck all the crap out. So I'm going to leave that sleeping dog on
there. He's very calm when you're doing the pod. He gets all mental when I'm doing it.
No, but he's got used to me just doing this now.
Mm.
Bless him.
Right, that's anyway, it.
I'm out of here.
She's not here tomorrow because we got another Sam tomorrow. We got Liverpool Sam tomorrow.
Have a lovely, lovely rainy day.
Yeah, crap, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
And I'll right off you go.
I'll see you on.
See you
Thursday.
Yeah, that's when you're back. Arrivederci.
Looks like the dog's coming with me.
Yeah, leave the door. Right, where are we? This falling into a state of disrepair. I've got a saying with Suggsy. I've got to stop doing it to myself. I watched that briefing again last night, and it is an instant way to flip your lid, isn't it? And I've got a saying with Suggsy when we're betting, and like I might say to him, "Oh, I'm doing this afternoon. Can you do this bit?" And I say to him, "I only want good news. I'm not interested in bad news, so I don't want him ringing me saying, 'Oh, that was 0-0, we didn't have a goal, we lost there.' I'm quite happy to say, 'Oh, yes, get in there.' Because I don't see the point in bad news, really. We know things are happening, we know we're going to lose bets, I know they happen, you know they happen. So perhaps, you know, I get loads of whack when I put things on Twitter because I don't show losing bets, apart from the fact that people forget I showed I lost 20 grand in October last year. But what is the winning bets that motivate people? What do you get out of a losing bet other than, "Oh, look, he doesn't win"? I don't really get it. And I know other people criticise others for the same thing. It's something I couldn't really give a monkey's about. But personally, I like good news. I mean, my mate who I was just talking about there, who had the running race, he dissects every single horse race every day that they have a bet in. Every loser sitting and talking to himself. And if you've had a bad day, I mean, they're betting 20, 25, 30 horses a day sometimes, and they have bad days. You have a bad day, putting yourself through that every 10, 15 minutes. By the end of the day, you're so depressed that he works himself into bad moods. But where I was going with this, it's the same with this flipping, isn't it? We seem obsessed I don't know whether this has always been the case, because I'm not a great one for the newspapers and news. I think they all talk shite. As I've said, they're all fairly agenda-driven. You know, whatever side of the fence you want to sit on. It's all a bit more confirmation bias, isn't it? You know, if you're a left-winger, you read The Guardian, it cements everything you believe. If you're a right-winger, you ring the Daily Mail, it cements it. I think it's all just a great big corrupt fraud, to be honest. But it has really leaked over into the TV, isn't it, that they just want bad news. Trying to catch people out. This number got... What's the number? What if we don't hit that number? What about that? You said 20,000. What about this? When's it going to be that? And I thought that Chris Whitty was really good last night. Again, just trying to draw him on a number and he just wouldn't do it. And he said it numerous times. I think we're in one of those situations. You only want good news, don't you? I mean, there was good news at football. Some of the football's coming back. That, for us, is a good news. You know, we're well aware all around the world people are dying. The idiots can hoax it up, whatever they want. Spout whatever garbage they want. Let them spout it. It's giving them the time and day. And the media are making this so much worse. Just talking shite and making stuff up and looking to trip people up. And I mean, as I said, I caught old Georgie out at the weekend just talking crap. Don't apologise for it. Doesn't say I got it wrong. Just the same old shite. I thought of a new show for her. Bingham Talks Bollocks. There you go. Talk Sport presents Bingham Talks Bollocks. Win double act with that Adrian Durham. But listening to the shite over this virus is just horrendous. And I don't really know why anybody's putting themselves through listening to it. I mean, look, the latest thing last night was the audience question from the public, and then I saw people having a go at that, and so ill-informed. Oh, they're self-picking the questions. He said categorically at the start there's a different poll picking the questions. Ah, oh, what's the point in having this if they're self-picking, self-selecting? Just absolute crap. Absolute, complete and utter waste of time, the whole thing. We are slowly getting on top of it. I think we don't need the figures every day. I don't really see the point in that. Give the figures a couple of times a week. We are coming to terms with it. Life is going to be different for 12 months, probably, maybe more. It's not been said any different. People, again, trying to pin down, what's it going to look like? When we come out of it, what's it going to look like? Nobody knows. It's only started in January. Nobody knows what it's going to look like yet because we don't know what's going to happen. And journalists and idiots trying to trip each other up. So... absolutely. Now, you said 20,000, it's now over that. The modelling actually said 500,000. The modelling said with no lockdown, 500,000 deaths approximately. One guy said, if we keep it under 20,000, it'll be a good result. That's what he said. He didn't say 20,000, he said, if we can keep it under 20,000, good result. Clearly, we're not going to keep it under 20,000. So he didn't say it's a bad result if we don't. He just said it's a good result if we can do that. But we can't. And as much as people want to shit and moan, look at what people did in the first few weeks, going to beaches and doing whatever they flipping liked. Nonsense. Anyway, so I've got a new thing now. I only want good news. So if you've got good news about it, then that's it. Otherwise, it is a complete and utter pointless waste of oxygen. Just being tried to use as a political tool to have a go at people. Can't be doing with it. And we have got some good news that there's some football coming back. It does look like through May, June. We're going to see a reasonable number of leagues come to fruition and start playing in whatever format that takes, behind closed doors or whatever. So from an FTS point of view, things will start to resume. Obviously, if Germany does kick off, then there'll be ultimate sheets for that. And stuff like FDD and things will take a view. I've spoken to them on... going to speak to them again on Thursday about... obviously for that one league doesn't really to me constitute a service, so obviously when we've got a number of leagues up and running, take a view as to how long they'll add on the end, basically, is where I was going with that. But yeah, let's just own, we only want good news. Good news breeds positivity. We know the bad shit's going on. We know we don't need to keep ramming it in every fucking day. Honestly, where am I going? I've done the poker. Book of the day, or shall we do? Yeah, let's do the book of the day. Book of the day, this is just one for interest again. I mean, obviously, when I started this, the book of the day and the stat of the day, I didn't really think it through, if I'm honest, because I thought, oh, 3 or 4 weeks, I can do that for a month. As we head towards 6, 8, 12 weeks, finding a good book that I've read every day and finding a stat of the day is going to prove slightly harder. I'm trying, but. I have got a book of a day. This one, again, if you're a punter, it's more interesting than anything. Certainly horse racing people will have heard of this. Some of you probably have read it. Barney Curley in 1975 masterminded a multi-million pound gamble, and he was able to repeat it again, which is amazing in Betfair days, in 2010. And basically it's a book of, it's called The Sure Thing, The Greatest Coup in Horse Racing History. And basically it's the complete story of how he managed to organise that gamble, and then the first one, and then follow it up. He's been a man much criticised and called a cheat and things in the time, but fair play to him. He did pull it off twice. And yeah, it's just a really interesting read. So, The Sure Thing, The Greatest Coup in Horse Racing History. It's a good book to read. If you're interested in horse racing, interested in punting, it's a fascinating read. So there you go. Recipe. I was talking on WhatsApp, my old mate, Scotty Scott. Old, I miss him actually. I haven't spoken to him for ages. He's been working. He's still been having to work, and he tried to catch me a couple of times. I'm busy, but he popped up on the old WhatsApp last night because he likes his poker, and he was a bit of a player, so he was sort of saying that these tournaments, you know, the people are playing rubbish cards and that, and I told him to shut up, and we went from one thing to another. But Scott is, I absolutely love him and his good lady, fantastic people, but he is one of the strangest eaters you'll ever see in your life. The boy, as I said to him last night, his shopping trip is the easiest in the world. He goes and gets 7 packs of mince and a bag of spuds, and that's him done, mince and tatty, 7 days a week. He went to, I can't remember whether it was, he went to Jamaica or Dominican Republic. I said, what did you eat? He went there on holiday. Steak every night. 7, 10 days on the trot, same dish every night. Doesn't like trying the curries and other sort of food. So just for you, Scotty boy, I've dug it out. The old mince and tatties. We'll do a traditional mince and tatties, little traditional mince and tatties recipe. But the fact of the day first, linked to Scotland, which I didn't know, an amazing fact, that Scotland is the home of fried chicken. Deep fried chicken came from Scotland, and it was with them emigrating to the southern United States. They took it with them, that it became a staple of American cuisine, and obviously became, you know, went on to become like the global success it is now with Kentucky Fried Chicken, or KFC, and obviously all the derivatives of it. But KFC is obviously a mega global company. Just imagine if the Scots had something about them back then. See, another thing they messed up, didn't went and gave it away rather than capitalise. We could have all been eating GFC now, couldn't we? Glasgow Fried Chicken, if they had anything about them. Instead, they tried to make the Mars bar the next sensation, honestly. Right, mince and tatties. So, simple, really simple. Quite tasty, actually. I actually went out for dinner with Scott and his good lady, and I ordered this. It's really nice. 500 grams of minced beef, you know, minced Scotch beef. An onion peeled and chopped finely. 2 carrots peeled and diced finely. A stick of celery diced finely. Some plain flour. 600 ml of beef stock. 2 tablespoons of Worcester sauce. Some black pepper and obviously oil. So over a medium pan, get the vegetables in the oil for about 5 minutes, softened but not burning, going brown. Once they're softened up, turn the heat up and add all the mince to the pan and fry that until it is well browned, about 8-10 minutes. When it is fried, when you've browned it off, reduce the heat again and sprinkle 2 tablespoons of plain flour over the top. And just stir for a couple of minutes just to cook that flour in. Then add your 600 ml of beef stock, add the 2 tablespoons of Worcester sauce, a bit of salt and pepper, and stir, bring to the boil and stir until it starts to thicken up. Then just simmer it for about 30 minutes. Don't let it go dry, keep an eye on it. If it's starting to dry out, just add a bit more stock till everything's cooked through and the veg is all tender. And then serve that, and don't serve it with mash. It's mince and tatties. Serve it with boiled potatoes. Absolutely, it is really tasty, lovely, nice, cheap, lovely, tasty, quick meal. Mince and tatties, but you don't have to have it every single flipping night, Scotty boy. Where are we? 25 minutes, flipping, dearie me. Somebody asked me how I record this podcast. I think it's no science. It's a microphone in a computer. Record the podcast, save it as an MP3, and publish it. There's a plug-in that's, the FTS site is run by, or hosted with, a WordPress site. There's just a plug-in you get, and you upload the MP3 and point it to the right direction. Job done. And then in the plugin, there's links to make it appear on Spotify and stuff like that. Don't ask me how all that works, because that bit I don't do. I just literally record it on my computer with this mic that... what's his name? Spreadsheets told me my mic was no good, so we just whacked that on. Job done. That's it. There isn't any... I don't know what you're expecting. It isn't a studio. It is just us sitting around talking into a computer. Got to do the Poisson. So, yes, so I talked about this yesterday. I gave a Poisson stat. Dio asked me why Serie A and Bundesliga and not La Liga. And I explained yesterday that that is just on one season's figures. So the Poisson in the Ultimates area, members area, only works on a rolling basis of the goals being scored in that season. We don't publish anything till 8 games have been played. We collect the first 8 games data. That's then used to create the expected goals for the 9th game, which is then used to create the correct score grid, which is then used to derive the match odds, first half goal, both teams to score, whatever. So it can vary. Football is a very predictable game. I've had this. People have heard me say it many times, and I've had this conversation with numerous people. Actually, I had it with Suggsy yesterday. We were talking about goals. I think people make it a lot harder than it is. But the reason why Spain isn't performing in that metric is Spain's goals are dropping fairly dramatically for average goals. And the main reason being the top two teams aren't scoring goals like they used to. So in that, as an example, in the Serie A and Bundesliga sample I gave of where my calculation makes it under 1.5, Juventus don't feature at all, and Bayern Munich, I think, feature twice. So if you take the top two clubs across whole season's data, you know, going back for those two, they feature twice. Barcelona alone feature 6 times. And the performance of Barcelona and Real Madrid in Spain really has affected the rest of the league with regard to goal numbers. So if you look in 15-16, they were averaging 2.74 goals a game. In 16-17, it went up to 2.94, which is pretty much where Serie A is now. Serie A is around 2.9, Bundesliga is about 3.2 for this season. So 2.94 in 16-17. 17-18, it was back down to 2.7. So it went 2.7 up to 2.9, down to 2.7. But you look this year, they're down to 2.5. So they're down averaging about 2.5 goals. When you actually look at the individual teams, this season's obviously not finished, but if you go back to 15-16, Barcelona scored 112 goals and Real Madrid scored 110. You go to 16-17, Barcelona scored 116, Real Madrid scored 106. You go to 17-18, they both scored just under 100. Barcelona 99, Real Madrid 94. You look at 18-19, Real Madrid only scored 63 goals. You know, in a few years they've gone from scoring 106, 107 to only scoring 63, and Barcelona are down to 90. And this season, I mean, Real Madrid have only scored 49 this season, so 11 games to go, they're not going to get anywhere near 100 again. You know, if they average 3 a game, they're going to get 82 at best. So you're talking another low season. And that's that drop-off in performance. It's just that drop-off in which when you keep those sort of figures and tabulate them, you find it quite easy to spot. You know, you take the French League average goals has pretty much stayed the same. Premier League, everybody talking about VAR. it's not really changing. But once you tabulate it, you see it. But the reason is Spain is a bit of an outlier because the goals are dropping off, and predominantly it's these top two teams. So that is why they're not showing up in things like that. Incidentally, in doing that, having a look, they have not had a 0-1 in Spain, not had a 0-1 score at all since March the 1st last year, 2019. I know we've not had any football up from February, but all the way from March through to the end of May, and then from August through to when football ceased, there hasn't been a 0-1 scoreline in Spain. Just interesting. But that's basically the reason why it's not shown up. The Poisson works on goal numbers and goal averages, and this season there's just not enough games qualifying in that because the goal average has dropped so far down at 2.54 from where it was. And that system of, obviously, if you're scoring more goals, you're bringing in more both teams to score lines, because the more goals they are, you know, if there's only one goal or no goals in the game, that then you can, there's no both teams to score. 0-0, 1-0, 0-1 is three score lines that there's no goals, that no way both teams to score win. You need to start getting up 2-3-4 goals where you can get the 2-2s, 2-1s, 3-1s, things like that, that make both teams to score a winner. It's still a market I'm battling with, trying to do other bits in, but it's just an interesting stat. If it, basically what we're saying, if Poisson figures are odds on, short odds on, and league averages are high, you will tend to find both teams to score is quite a profitable angle. So you want a low Poisson figure, so lowly generated 1.3, 1.4, 1.5. So Poisson's making it a high percentage of both teams to score, coupled with high league average of goals. So 3.2, as I say, in Bundesliga, 2.9 something in Serie A. Generally, you'll find that that can be a winning formula. You have to look a bit deeper. And as I said, mine's a slightly modified Poisson. It's don't just take the numbers, figures. You know, I don't think there's any model that you can make and go, I'll bet every single game and that's going to be fantastic. It's sort of the nirvana we all search for. You have to put other bits into it. But I don't know whether you find this stuff interesting or not. I just find myself waffling. It's funny when you sat here on your own, you think, am I just waffling to myself? So that's that. So that leads me into the stat of the day. Just looking at the correct score sheet. I was fiddling around with this one yesterday, so I thought, as I said, you know, you are, I'm conscious, again, somebody said yesterday, load of stats, really enjoying them, don't know what ones to take forward. I am conscious of giving you so much that it's confusing people. I'm a less is more man. So I'm going to have a think about these stats over the next few days and whether it's actually wise to continue. But then there'll be people who say, I only listen to it for the stat of the day. The whole real idea was to get you looking at stuff slightly differently as opposed to, they're 100%, you know, over 1.5 goals in the last six games. It's trying to get you to look at different angles of it, look at pricing, look at models, this side. So that's really why I started it. But as I said, I didn't think it through, thinking, actually, I've got to do 70, 80, 90 days of this and come up with something different every day. So it's more just pointing you in ways to have a look. But this is an angle I do use myself. On the FDD sheet, you've got two ratios. On the six game sheet, I like the using the ratios. And on the six game sheet, where you've got an HA ratio, so home and away ratio, greater than 4.5, which is basically telling you that the two teams involved are either scoring goals or letting in goals in recent games. You know, just check that. If there's a 110 nil in there, then it can be slightly distorted. But so check that. So HA ratio over 4.5 or greater than equal 4.5. If you look on the correct score sheet, the 0-0, laying 0-0 is 100 points up, and laying 0-1 is 127 points up. But obviously you involve laying big prices, and we've seen threads where people have come on saying, I'm going to lay 0-0. And ultimately, you know, two or three results and you're on the back foot. I'm not saying it won't win, but you've got to have some balls and be prepared to lay it at some big prices. I use them slightly differently. I moat those games and those score lines, and I look, right, hang on a minute, what about if it's 0-0 on 70 minutes or 0-1 on 70 minutes in these games? And adding the two score lines together, 0-0, 0-1, and looking at games that are that score on 70 minutes and then laying them from there. So in effect, you're getting in round about even money and under. As you drip lay, you're probably going in 70 minutes round about 2.2. Going down, the more time passes on. It's quite a good, those of you like late goals, late goal methods. I've won about 40 points laying those two score lines in games over 4.5 ratio that are that price on 70 minutes and just drip laying in over a period of time. Obviously, you know, what I tend to do is I'll do a lay around about 70 minutes and then I don't do anything for 10 minutes and then I'll do 80, 85 and maybe one, you know, 88, 89 to catch a really low price. So, you know, you can just break your stake up into three or four and drip lay it in. But I like to be at the far end of it, in effect. I like, obviously, you want something at 70 because if there's a goal, you want to catch it. But as time goes on, the price goes down. You can get in cheap. And obviously, your strike rate doesn't have to be as good then. So that's quite an effective method of actually taking a profitable correct score blind in 90 minutes, but looking at it another way. And as I say, that's all I try and get you guys to do. But high ratios over 4.5, it's column H on the FDD sheet, but that ratio is based on six games. If you use a current season sheet, you will get a different number in that box because one is over six games, one is over every game played that season. So just be aware of that. Okay, I hope there's some use to what I'm saying here. So I've done the book. The stat was the old fried chicken. Messed it up, Glasgow fried chicken. Done the stat. Sam's talked nonsense. We've done the poker. I've talked about COVID. Done the book. Is that the lot? I don't even know myself what I'm going to do on here anymore. Tomorrow I'm going to be speaking to Sam Cassidy. Sam's been a long time FTS member. I'm really looking forward to that actually because Sam's been through sort of all sorts. As I say, the problem we've got is the old accent. We've got to somehow get through the old Scouse accent. The first, poor old Jeff, when he came on, I accused him of being a northerner. This is the first proper northerner. We're branching out. I mean, we've got to get a Scotsman on at some time, haven't we? Then we'll need Russ Abbott along to interpret. Poker Friday, do register, guys. It's the tournament's there for register. Let's get the numbers up Friday. Let's have a good old tourney. We've gone a 5-minute blind, so there will be breaks. So good fun. Thanks to everybody again who played last night. Thanks to everybody listening. Yeah, let's move on. Right, have a lovely day. I've got plenty of stuff to do today, and I will see you all or speak to you all tomorrow morning. Have a good one.